And welcome back to discussing election 2020 with political science students at Dominican. I am your host, Thomas Gibbons, editor-in-chief of the Dominican Star, and today I have on with me a senior Dominican, another political science major, Max Ramos. Max, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
First off, thanks again for coming on. I've had some of your classmates on in the past, and it's gone really well. And I think this series has really come along and kind of given an insight from the peers at Dominican, kind of like, you know, an insight from our school building on what you guys are working on, what you guys have been talking about. So I hope we can get a lot more insight from you with our discussion.
Awesome.
First question I have for you is, the biggest news this week in terms of coming out of the White House was that the Trump administration is said to be starting to cooperate with the Biden transition team in terms of helping them in aid to getting ready to take over in the White House. What are your thoughts on that? You know, how much truth is there to that? Or, you know, is this news being blown into something that it's not?
I actually think the news of Trump not cooperating with the transition team was more blowout than anything. I think Trump has a base that is not normal to a regular political candidate we see, and he needs to frequently fuel his base with something. So I think the lawsuits and everything is to try to fuel the base, keep hope alive, but at the same time, I think Trump, as well as his whole administration, knows that they lost, and I think they were always planning to go through with a transition team for Biden.
What do you mean by, like, I'd like for you to expand on this more, by not your, like, regular run-of-the-mill support for a candidate?
So, you know, Trump has frequently, how do I explain this? He uses social media, which is one, not consistently, which is not what a normal political candidate would do, as we've seen in the past. But two, he likes to throw out ideas and more theories than more political candidates. So with the whole voter fraud and the lawsuits, you know, Trump doesn't have evidence to back up what he's throwing out there, but it fuels his base because it keeps hope and it keeps the idea that, you know, they're not giving up just yet. And I think that's what his base needs to stay politically active, which is at the end of the day what not only Trump is hoping but what Republicans are hoping, because Trump brought out a whole new set of Republicans that we've seen before, but we didn't see on the national stage before. And in a lot of ways, like, to keep them politically active is you need to fuel them with something. You need to throw out these ideas. You need to expand more on, like, your ideas and everything. And that's what they need to stay politically active.
I think the use of social media in today's politics is very interesting, you know, from Trump's tweets, or whether it's tweets from, you know, any member of Congress. You know, it's a way to reach out to supporters. It's a way to put an idea out there. And Trump has used, you know, his Twitter as a baseline for, you know, his run, you know, during his presidency. He's not afraid to put on Twitter, you know, he's not afraid to put out there what he, you know, what he thinks.
Yeah, he's very, another way you can describe him as a unique candidate compared to all the other ones we've seen is he's very unfiltered. He says exactly what he says, and a lot of people like that. However, it does bring some controversy to it as well, because, you know, as we all know, you need to be careful with your words sometimes, because there are people that take offense. And Trump isn't afraid to just say what he wants to say. And I've actually worked with one Republican in the past from Illinois former Lieutenant Governor Evelyn Sanguinetti, and she's expressed concern about the tweeting because she said off the bat, you know, the tweeting is way overdone. It's used way too much. I think the American people like the fact that politicians are being innovative with using social media to get out their message and to communicate with their constituents. But I think at the same time, people like limits. And that's something that in the Trump administration, we don't see too much. There is no limits.
Yeah, like you're saying, I think this age of new media, you know, the politicians are definitely taking advantage of it because they can reach out to likely voters, you know, Snapchat, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook. There's so many avenues that they can reach out to people and hopefully gain their vote. And like we just discussed, Trump has used it a lot. It's been a base of what he's done. It's been, you know, through the whole, you know, all like the rioting and looting, you know, you know, how many times, I wonder, has he tweeted Law and Order? You know, he's consistently, you know, sending home a certain message, and it's resonating with his supporters.
Yeah, it's something that, and on top of that, he uses a lot of like short snippets of his message, like the Make America Great Again, MAGA. You'll see that a lot because it really resonates with his base. It's short, it's sweet, it's simple, and it's something that can really be done quickly. And I think, too, when you use the phrase law and order, it brings a lot of meaning to that because at the same time, like, when you try to debate, like, well, that's not what I'm for, like, that's not, well, it goes back to, well, you're not for law and order, you're not to make America great again, and that's what kind of puts people in like that trap of words, like, you know, where you know what the meaning is behind it, but you don't want to, it's hard to disagree with it because it's so short, sweet, and simple. It's not like what normal politicians would do when they try to elaborate and explain in longer sentences on what they plan to do, and then you can easily just like debate it.
So the big word that I took away from that was, you know, Trump's been unfiltered. And I agree with that because he is not afraid to hold back, whether it's against current politicians or people that he's fired from his administration. You know, he's going to call out if someone is doing a great job or they're doing a bad job.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's not a bad thing being unfiltered. I think though that people get concerned is, you know, when you're very unfiltered all the time, there's certain things that you can say that even if you don't mean to get out of context, it does. So I'm not here to debate whether President Trump is right or wrong about what he says. But, you know, like I said, the reason why most politicians stay filtered is because they don't want to come out too controversy with their words or too controversial. And that's exactly what Trump does when he just says what he says, and it not only angers a lot of the Democratic Party, but a lot of times it worries the Republican Party because there's a lot of Republicans that want to be behind the president for power reasons, but at the same time, it's like a limit. Like, where do I draw the line? Where do I say, like, you know, that wasn't right for him to just say that? And at the same time, because he's fueled out this new base that's more unfiltered and more non-politically correct, it's more, they don't want to anger that base because that's the base that's really, we've seen in the 2020 elections, they really came out this time. And that's a base that a lot of people underestimated.
Switching over to the other side of the aisle, do you think there are Democrats who are doing the same thing like Trump that are maybe using social media too much to an extent?
I'm sure there is. I actually haven't seen one personally, like, because I think the media does emphasize a lot on the president. But at the same time, I'm sure a lot of politicians do that. And I'm sure a lot of politicians need to learn their limits. We've seen right now, we've seen the Democratic Party, between the more blue dog or moderate side of the party fight with the progressive side of the party, and they're using social media to do that. And I don't know if that's the best way to communicate after this election, because then you're kind of putting it in people's heads, like, was this the right choice I made? Because keep in mind, even though 2020 is over, most politicians are already looking forward to 2022. And that's not going to be a good start for them.
The past decade or so, I mean, the uptick in social media usage, you know, the advancements that have been made on these apps, you know, the numerous apps that are out there. I think it's definitely been overall a good thing for politicians because it's getting their message out there a lot faster. It's better than, you know, you still need the ground troops. You still need people going door to door. You still need those people who register voters. But I think overall, if you take away for a second, you know, Trump's unfiltered tweets, or if the Democrats, maybe you're tweeting too much, if you look at it as a whole, I think that, you know, especially in the pandemic we're in and the use of Zoom and the use of, you know, electronic events that both the candidates had, I think it's a major plus for politician races.
Yeah, it really is. And it's honestly going to be the next new thing in politics is social media. I just think it's, you know, it's going to be hard because there's going to need to be limits. And on top of that, there's now this new thing where it's like fake news and misinformation, where people are sending, posting, or we're even seeing politicians posting conspiracy theories. And it's like, you know, is that really good to send to, you're connecting to a lot of your constituents and even outside your base, and it's awesome, but it's like, is that the message you really want to send? Because now politicians are using it more than just spreading a message on what they stand for. Again, it's going to be a huge debate on what limits there needs to be, and not that social media is a bad thing. Social media for them is going to be a good thing in the future, but it's going to cause a lot of controversy before we look at it as a good thing.
Right, and I think we are seeing it today, especially all the controversy with the censorship that Facebook and Twitter is doing, and that they've been brought to multiple hearings in front of Congress, you know, for it. You know, when they look at how, you know, they may only be censoring, you know, conservative pages, or that they're, you know, specifically, you know, censoring Trump over voter fraud, something that they're currently fighting for and investigating. So what are your thoughts on censorship, and how far can Facebook and Twitter, you know, really go and not, you know, hurt that freedom of speech?
You know, there's not really a good answer for that, because freedom of speech is the number one important thing that we as Americans have. And that's something that should never be taken away from us. But at the same time, you're having this new trend of people who are spreading misinformation. They're denying science, they're denying math, they're basically rewriting history. And it's like, or they're coming up with new, ways around the law. And it's like, there's people believing this because that's all they have is social media. And it really causes the problem. Like, that's what I'm saying. That's going to be the main controversy, is where limits need to be made. There needs to be limits, but at the same time, where do you draw the line? And I think that's going to be the number one thing. The one thing I can say for sure, though, is we all know, or we all should know, when we sign up for Facebook, when we sign up for Twitter, that they have guidelines and regulations on their page. If you don't like it, you know, you don't have to be a part of that page. That's why I think, I forgot what site it was called, but there's now a new conservative site that doesn't do censorship at all.
Parler.
Yes, that's what I was thinking. I was actually thinking of that, but I wasn't fully sure. And there's more conservatives being drawn to that. And
sorry.
There's like just the idea of what, like, where the line needs to be drawn, because, and it creates the problem because, unfortunately, social media is the only thing that people use to research. And if you're getting spread misinformation, are you ever going to gather true information that you can debate? So again, it's just, right. There's a lot of factors that play into this, and there's really no right way to regulate this. If anything, there's really no way to regulate this. It's just, all I can really say is, if you don't like a social media platform's rules, then just don't join it.
Yeah, Parler has been an up and coming, new form of social media. You know, it draws to conservatives. Obviously, it's really started to catch fire in the summer, and it's really caught fire now. You know, considering the voter fraud and considering that people are fed up with censorship on Twitter and Facebook. And I totally agree with your statement. I think, majority of Americans do, is that the freedom of speech is the most important thing that we have. You know, it's written there in the Constitution, and it's something that should never be taken away from us. But, there is a line to draw in the sand, whether you're spreading a conspiracy theory that's already been debunked, or you're actually spreading, correct, verified information.
And not only that, but it brings the problem of, when you have those problems, it brings the problem of what people can actually trust. When you start questioning, and when more people start spreading conspiracy theories through social media, people start to question, can I actually believe this? You know, there's so many going around with the pandemic that people are now, they hear something from a scientist and they sit there and they say, well, can I trust this? That is causing problems, because you can't trust a scientist or medical experts. Who can you trust?
Right. And this was speaking, you brought up into my next point here. In the last two conversations I've had with students, I asked this question. Obviously, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have started their transition. They have their transition team. They're all over social media with it. And one of the first things they did is they put together their own COVID task force, like what Mike Pence did in the White House. And it led me to think, you've had the COVID task force saying one thing the entire year, and now you have Biden's team of people, either repeating wear a mask, wash your hands, or they're talking of other things that are not being talked by, Vice President Pence's task force. Is it a problem that there's maybe conflicting messages, that there's two groups trying to talk about the same thing?
I think there's a problem when, yes and no, to answer that shortly, but the problem, I think, lies in the fact that people are taking both their messages and trying to compare and contrast. At the end of the day, they're basically saying the same thing. It's just the way they're saying it comes from different standpoints. You have the Trump administration, who's emphasizing the importance of the pandemic, but is more focused on opening the economy and giving people more freedoms throughout the pandemic, while you have the Biden administration, who's saying the same thing, but they're more focused on, okay, let's get this pandemic under control, and then we can open more stuff up. Like, health comes first before the economy. So I think the way the media takes it, and I think a lot of the American people take upon that, looks different, but it's actually the same thing. It's just coming from two different perspectives. That's why you need to be that's why I always say you need to be you need to look at both sides and be really careful what you determine, because they could be possibly saying the same thing. It's just coming from two different standpoints on that.
Right. And do you think that Joe Biden should have waited, to start this team, at least wait till, after the electors meet, or do you think this was the right time for him to get the ball rolling and get his message out?
I don't think so. You know, every administration, when it's going to change to a different administration, they have always started right away. I don't see a problem with it. We've always done it pretty much that way, at least in the modern, like, years that we've done this. So I don't see a problem with that. I know a lot of people who do have a problem with it. It's mostly because they're kind of upset of the outcome, and that's understandable. You know, we all win some, we all lose some, but just because we're upset about the outcome doesn't mean we necessarily have to change the rules just because it didn't come out in our favor. And I think a lot of Republicans, like some being Mitt Romney, have emphasized, like, you know, what's fair is fair. You know, Joe Biden won, let him start right away. It wasn't like, trying to remember back in 2016, like, after Trump won, Obama invited him right away to the White House so they can begin talks about transition. Like, I'm actually kind of surprised that Trump in some way hasn't tried to attempt to do that. But at the same time, you know, there is no rule that says it needs to begin right away, but that's what we've always done. So I just feel like it would be more courteous to allow Biden to do that. And if Trump is still waiting for something like court or lawsuits to overturn this election, then he should allow the beginning of a transition to start. And then if it switches, then hey, then you can immediately back out of it. There's nothing can really be done until after Joe Biden's inaugurated anyway. So it's not like you're really like shoving anything through the door just yet.
So you're aiming for the common courtesy aspect.
Yeah. You know, like I said, we've done it for every other president in modern history. So, you know, just go ahead and do it. And if election fraud is going to be proven and it does overturn the election, then you can do that. You can start the transition and then wait till after it's done so. But right now, the way things are looking, that's not going to happen. So you need to give, in my opinion, give the common courtesy and allow Biden to properly transition the way Barack Obama did for him or for President Trump.
You mentioned before we got on this talk that you are in an elections class for your political science major. Yes. With voter fraud being such, you know, a thing in the news and such, you know, a forefront being pushed from the Trump administration, what were the conversations like between peers and professors in the following days and weeks of the election?
I think everyone was just, after it was clear that how the election was going to turn out, I think everyone was just questioning, is election fraud possible? And it actually is, but it's not as common as everyone thinks it is. And at the rate that Biden had won the election, it's not just, even if, like, how do I explain this in a good way? There's not enough possible voter fraud to overturn this election. There's always, in every election, there's always going to be voter fraud at some degree, and it's going to be from both parties, but it's not enough to overturn an election. And I think that I think that's what we were talking about, was what was the possibility that there could be millions of just illegal ballots like Trump is claiming. And,
you know, and Trump was pushing home, you know, voter fraud, illegal ballots. You know, if you're going to do a mail-in, request an absentee, because mail-in ballots, they're going to send, you know, how many out. You know, he was pushing that narrative before the election.
And you know what? That's actually, in my opinion, that's very dangerous to do, because you don't, like I said, he's now fueled a new base in American politics. And when you're going to feed your base that, it's very, very dangerous to do, because people take that very seriously. Elections mean a lot to people because they take out their time to go out and vote and to fill out a ballot. So to say something is completely rigged and it's going to immediately take away your win, you're literally like furating voters, and it's going to cause a lot of conflict, and that's something you should never do before an election. If you truly believe that there's going to be voter fraud in election, wait till after the results, because you do not know what the election's going to be until after it happens.
So do you think that Trump, you know, going around and saying that there's a lot of voter fraud, you know, here's another situation of ballots being found in a garbage can, or, you know, someone getting 15 mail-in ballots sent to their house with, you know, past residents. There's been multiple stories on that. But overall, do you think of him talking of voter fraud, is it going to turn the average voter away thinking that their vote won't count? Or could it add fuel to a fire of a base that says, well, you know, if there is voter fraud, that means that they might try and steal the election. We have to get out there and vote and make our voices heard.
That can be debatable, because you're going to have both. You're going to have people that say, you know what, forget it. This is all rigged. It's all corrupt. And even if those people aren't going to vote the same way you are, that's still dangerous, because that puts a threat to our democracy, because we won't actually know what the American people want if they don't go out and vote. And at the same time, if you push people to vote that feel that their votes didn't count before, there's not really a negative to that, because we've actually seen that in Georgia. You know, there was a lot of speculation that voter suppression took place when the 2008 Georgia governor election for Stacey Abrams was taken from her. But instead, it fueled a lot of that base, and a lot of that base came out and voted this time. And you've seen Georgia for the first time and since Bill Clinton that Georgia went blue. And that was an idea that no one thought, everyone knew it was a possibility, but no one thought it was going to happen.
As of today, Georgia has sent out 760,000 mail-in ballots. Do you possibly see this as a here we go again, or is Georgia going to continue this turning their state blue?
It depends, because, you know, we see patterns. Whoever gets into the presidency, we always see in the midterms that, or elections afterwards, that it trends the opposite way. And that's just how the people are. Whoever's in charge, you know, we always want change. So whoever's in charge, you always vote. A lot of people tend to vote the opposite way. Or a lot of that base that was fueled out to go vote for that candidate just doesn't show up because they're satisfied with how things turned out. So, you know, I don't think that is necessarily an indication that Georgia is turning blue. However, I do think there might still be some controversy over, you know, the Senate races. If people are voting by ballots again, or mail-in ballots again, there's going to be, no matter how the election turns out, it's going to be a controversy of, was this actually fair? And the truth is we've been doing mail-in ballots for a long time already. The president voted by mail. It's really not, it takes a lot of time to go through those mail-in ballots. That's why they're still counting mail-in ballots everywhere. That's why a lot of races everywhere haven't been called, because they're still trying to count them. But there's a process to make sure that these mail-in ballots are legit. So to sit there and say that, no, these are fraud because they're mail-in ballots, is really just, it's a narrative. It's just a way to say why something didn't go your way.
Like we know, Georgia has been historically conservative. You know, most of those southern states are. So do you think, you know, come the runoff on January 5th, that the grassroots voters are going to turn out? Or is it going to be, I mean, like you said, there, you know, the trend, you know, could be this way, could be that way, but there could be, you know, an opportunity to go against the trend. Is there that much of a strong Democrat support down there? Or do you think that with, you know, outside the presidential election, there's going to be a good turnout for the usual grassroots conservative voters?
I really can't say either way. I can say for sure that it can go either way. Republicans can gain two seats or keep two seats, and Democrats can gain two seats. Georgia is in the position where they're considered a toss-up, and they're not considered a toss-up for any reason. They're considered a toss-up because there's enough eligible voters to vote either way. There's enough Democrat voters out there to gain two seats. There's enough Republican voters to keep two seats. It just all depends on which base is able to come out the more.
Going back in time a little bit, morning of Election Day, who did you think was going to win?
I thought Joe was going to win. There's a lot of people, and I'm not going to sugarcoat it, even me, that felt 4 years of Trump was more like eight already. So I'm sure there was a lot, and not to mention there was a lot of people in 2016 that just didn't go out and vote because they just didn't, they weren't inspired by Hillary, they weren't inspired by Trump, so they didn't show up. So I knew, everybody knew what was going to be at stake in 2020, so more people were going to come out and vote. I actually underestimated both Trump and Biden. I didn't think it was going to be way over 70 million votes for each of them, but it was. So I guess a lot of people were just motivated to vote this time. And if you think about it, for a lot of people, there's a lot on the line, or at least it feels like it.
Absolutely. And, you know, despite what the official outcome will be, you know, there's going to be a lot of happy people and a lot of upset people. But I think this was, you know, putting all that aside, I think this was a very good election for the United States, because we need this kind of turnout. It can't be underestimated enough. It can't be, you know, stressed enough that you got to go out and vote, because if you don't vote, you know, there's always that saying, like, you know, you don't have the right to complain then, right? Like, if you go out and vote, you put your vote out there, you know, you supported that candidate, you can also go against the other one. But overall, I think that using your right to vote is so important, and being a part of the democracy is very important
too. Well, not only that, but like, not, again, I'm not coming in favor or against President Trump, but a lot, if you look at polling data, a lot of people, there was only very few times where most Americans were satisfied with what President Trump was doing. You can see in Real Clear Politics when they actually like have people survey people and say, are you satisfied with what's going on right now? There was an overwhelming majority of people saying, I'm not satisfied. Well, if people aren't satisfied with this, why did the election turn out that way? And it's because in 2016, a lot of people just didn't show up. And even though we had record-breaking people show up in 2020, we still haven't had a good percentage, in my opinion, of people show up to vote. We don't, what was it? Like, I think the last time I checked, it was 64% of eligible voters that voted this time. Like, that's amazing, because that's record-breaking in modern history, but that's still, where are the other 35% of people doing that are eligible to vote? And you have choices to unbelieve. Like, you don't have to vote for the two main candidates. You can vote third party. You even have a write-in option. You can literally write in yourself if you were really that dissatisfied with everybody, but they chose not to even participate. So how do we know what the majority of America wants when there's still a large majority that doesn't participate?
Yeah, that is one of the biggest questions. And going back to what you were saying on Trump's likability among the American people, I think we could agree, you know, that the pandemic definitely took a toll on that. I think it would for any president, just because, you know, they're what everyone looks up to. They're the people that they're going to look to him or her, you know, in the future, possibly, you know, a female president, but they're going to look to their leader. as to what to do about it. And I think anyone put in a kind of position that President Trump has been put in, that there's going to be a lot of angry people.
Yeah, I don't, you can't necessarily, if I'm being honest, blame the pandemic on President Trump, because this was going to happen no matter who was in charge. If Hillary won, this was going to be a serious issue. However, I think it was just the way you handled when it got here was what everyone debated, because I don't know if a lot of people realize, and I know we're from a college that's mostly liberal, we would think like most people would want people's health to be a priority over the economy, but there's actually a lot of voters who went out and voted because they were scared of a second shutdown. Like, this is on the, like, the pandemic was on the mind for everybody, but the reasoning to vote because of the pandemic was not all the same. Some people wanted to avoid more regulations and a shutdown. Some people were for it. So that's, I don't think people realize, even though Trump lost, he still had 73 million people vote for him. He's the second candidate who's had the most votes in American history. He's still very relevant, even though Joe Biden won. And there's still a lot of people that Joe's going to have to convince if we do go into a second shutdown, or if there is more regulations for the pandemic, that this is the direction we need to take. And it's not going to be pretty either way.
Right. It may not take voters a lot of motivation to choose a candidate, right? If someone wants health care for all, then Joe Biden is the easy answer. If you don't want a mask mandate, you don't want another lockdown, and you're loving the way the stock market's going, and you know if there's a possible switch in administrations that could go a different way, then you'd go vote for President Trump.
Not only that, but I think a lot of people look at it as they're already worried of what's happening, and we don't know, even though Joe Biden has said what he plans to do, we don't know if he's actually going to pursue it. So I think a lot of people were worried, you know, I don't like the way things are going, but at the same time, I don't know if they can be worse, because they can be. So I think that was also a motivating factor, that people are worried that there's going to be even worse change. So they're scared. They're worried about what else could be added on. Because I think we can all agree 2020 was absolutely horrible. People are out of jobs. People are getting sick. People are losing money left and right. People are seeing stuff on the news happen every day that's just causing more and more fear. It's like, what else do we really need more change? So I think that's another motivating factor that people take in.
So let's look ahead. If Joe Biden gets sworn in, it looks like he will, or if Trump is able to win some cases, or if it goes to the Supreme Court and it goes back in Trump's favor, what are some of the first tasks that either will have to do to calm the fear, to, you know, settle down a nation that is breaking at the seams in a lot of things?
So I think no matter who gets it, I think the first thing that needs to be done is that president needs to work with Congress to get a second COVID relief package passed. I think that's everybody's first priority, because a lot of people have took an economic hit on this pandemic. Like, I personally don't know anybody who's not personally affected by this economy right now because of the pandemic. So I think a COVID relief package is going to need to be first priority, no matter who gets in. If Trump gets in, he is now going to need to, let me think, he's going to need to really just convince people like that there's that he really is, like, he's really going to help people in this pandemic, and that he's going to have a plan. Because I think for a majority of the people that didn't vote for him because they don't like the way he's handling this, and he's going to have to convince them that he's going to have some type of plan to get this under control. And for Biden, he's going to need to really connect with the people
because I know he wants, Biden wants to get this virus under control, and he wants to take the CDC's recommendations first as the first approach. He's going to need to convince people that they're not going to fall under the economy more, and that they're going to be able to survive through this financially. So it's going to, they're going to have to, the first thing they're going to have to do is convince a base that didn't vote for them that they're here for them. And it's not going to be easy. And especially if it's Biden, it's going to be even harder because Biden's going to need to put in a whole new administration through. He's going to need to, because we've seen with every president, especially when it's switching parties, they pretty much just eliminate everybody from the previous administration. So by, and assuming that Biden's going to do that, he's going to need to really just start filling people in to, before other issues start become a problem. So there's a lot that both of them are going to need to do. I think Biden more than Trump, but as long as they're able to do it, I think one thing that Biden's going to need to do is, because even though there's a possibility that Democrats could gain 2 seats in the Senate, he's going to need to call McConnell and start preparing and negotiating, because if the Senate remains Republican, he's going to need to pass that bill. And Biden actually hasn't communicated with McConnell at all. And that's going to be a serious problem. Joe Biden has worked with Mitch McConnell in the Senate for many years. He has the opportunity to actually bring decency and compromise back into the Congress to get stuff done. At the same time, Trump's going to need to, I know when Pelosi and Secretary Mnuchin had a deal, Trump's going to need to, if Trump overturns the election and he becomes president, he's going to need to reconsider their negotiations, because that's probably the closest thing that we've seen to a compromise between the Democrats and Trump's administration.
Right. It's going to be tough for whoever gets in. And right now it's looking like it's going to be Joe Biden. You know, there hasn't been really, you know, too much ground in terms of Trump's legal cases. I know there's been a lot of affidavits. There's been a lot of press conferences, but I'm still waiting for, you know, the cold hard facts. They're continuing to put things into the works. But, you know, for me, it's, you know, once more facts are presented, you can either gain or lose hope.
Honestly, they're really, not that I want to sound too much for Biden, but there really isn't much hope for Trump at this point. It's going to be Biden, and I think everyone needs to start mentally preparing themselves that it's going to be Biden, because at the end of the day, it's going to go, the only way this is going to get flipped is if it goes to the Supreme Court, and by the attitudes of the Supreme Court, even though there's 6 conservative judges, they don't want to take this up. They don't want a repeat of 2000. And even in 2000, it showed Bush was winning, and they basically said it goes to Bush. It's not going to just, and that was closer than it was now. It's not going to be a pretty picture for Trump, especially because 2 of his Supreme Court nominees have actually voted against Trump on several cases. And that's Neil Gorsuch and Amy Coney Barrett. Actually, even though a lot of people were upset of her nomination, I actually was too. She's not as conservative when it comes to these issues as many people think. And I think she's going to honestly piss off a lot of Republicans if it goes to the Supreme Court, because I don't think she's going to go in favor of Trump.
I think that you said a good point. Like, they don't want it to get there. They don't want to repeat or just overall be put in this kind of position where, you know, there could be pushback. Yeah, they have. Of course, they voted against some cases with Trump. I don't think everyone's expected to go against everything that one person says. So there is going to be some pushback. But yeah, overall, whoever gets in, it's going to be a tough job, because there is a lot to tackle outside of
not only that, but you gotta keep in mind that the only way it's going to make it to the Supreme Court is if the main question is going to be, did the states follow their rules for the election? So far from what we know,
every state has followed their rules 100%. They haven't broke any rules. And that's what the Supreme Court's going to say, basically, if it goes to them. They're going to say they followed the rules, so we can't just agree with you because you're upset because of possible voter fraud. And even though there's allegations of voter fraud, there still, to this day, hasn't been really any evidence. There's rumors, there's conspiracies, there's ideas, but there's no evidence. There's really nothing. And that's what makes it hard on these judges, because they can't just rule in court. This is what people forget. Courts, even though politicians try to politicize them, they're really not political. They're straight to the books, to the Constitution. And there's absolutely no rules that have been broken yet. There's no evidence. And that's why Trump's cases aren't going anywhere. And that's why a lot of people are getting upset. But I think when we start to realize that, I think at the moment, we just all need to accept that Joe Biden won, and we need to just be okay with that. We had to learn to be okay when Donald Trump won, even though there were allegations of Russian interference, which there are, but not to the extent that people think or believe. So we just need to be okay. And that's part of democracy. Things don't always go your way, but it's what the people voted on. And if you're upset, you just got to make sure you go and vote again next election.
Yeah. And it's, you know, whether it's going to be proven or not, voter fraud is still going to be, and these cases are still going to be at the top of the news headlines in the coming weeks. So that about, I think, wraps up our conversation. Max, thanks a lot again for coming on. I think we touched on a lot of great things, and I appreciate
Problem. I'm happy to talk about this. This is literally what I study, so.
Yeah, fantastic. And I think we had a good spirit of discussion on a lot of different things. Everybody, that wraps up this episode with discussing the election with political science students.